I pray we would read it, we would pray about it, and pray for understanding, and then practice what you've told us to do in Yeshua's name. Amen. So, as we continue with our series entitled, remember the mini-series? Remember the mini-series? Yeah, well, okay, we may take it as far as the regional. Okay, well, that's mini compared to other ones we've had, right? The two-year ones? All right, anyway, lessons in leadership. Today we're going to be looking at Daniel. So turn in the Bible to Daniel. Anywhere is fine. Because we'll be there, okay? Daniel. All right. And again, I get this coat hanging thing in my ear, so, you know, well. Well. Me, I'm killing you. You're killing me. The coat hanging in my ear. Oh, well, there we go. Dolly, help me out, will you? A staple gun? You know? I don't think the Apostle Paul is this kind of trouble. Okay? At all. Anyway, feel free, Mark, to come up and address me anytime, okay? Yeah. Well, a long time ago, actually around the year 605, okay, the two world superpowers, right? It's okay? It's not okay. It's just coming under. What are we doing? The problem might be my ear. You ever thought of that? I need duct tape. Okay, where's that? How's that? Okay, good. Had to do with the earlobe. 605, about the two world superpowers, which would have been Egypt and Babylon, clashed in a very famous battle, the Battle of Carchemish. Babylon won. They defeated the Egyptians. Jeremiah records that in the book of Jeremiah, by the way. And then Babylon became the single ruling world empire. Babylon at that time, and for some time, had controlled Israel in that her kings, the kings of Israel, had to pay tribute to Babylon, and they had to be in submission to Babylon, but they were allowed some freedom. But as our history goes, we rebelled many times, right, against that. And Babylon got upset about that. So they put a stop to it by tightening things up and controlling more. And the last holdout of this tightening up was, of course, the city of Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar sieged Jerusalem. And around just about the year 605 and shortly following that, after that battle, he sent more troops into Israel. And then he began to deport people from Israel back to Babylon. There were three major deportations. Okay, they took the best and the brightest for training. So that starts the book of Daniel. So Daniel chapter 1, you see this taking place. This is about that year. Verse 3. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles. Young men, in whom there was no blemish, good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. In verse 6, and among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So Daniel was included at the top of the list of those who were the best and the brightest. He was about 16 years old at this time, a kid, a teenager, high school age when he was deported. But he was above everybody else, and he people noticed that they saw that. Now, he would never see Jerusalem again. He would never come back to the land of Israel again. It's interesting, when you take a look at Daniel, he's a missionary, but he didn't go voluntarily. Okay, he was sent all right, but not on his own will. Sometimes God does that as well. But you'll see in the whole book of Daniel that he is God's representative to kings in a foreign land, and his presence made a difference. It was kingdom changing. Ezekiel would be deported 8 years after this. Ezekiel refers to Daniel three different times. And each time it's about Daniel's righteousness and how right on and how close to God he is. In the course of time, as you know, the year 586, Jerusalem and the temple were destroyed. Daniel makes reference to that. Jeremiah had accurately predicted all of these events and wrote that God is using a pagan nation to bring judgment against Israel because of their sin. You know, God does that. He will use the pagans to judge his people. And he's done it more than once. Jeremiah, that's the book of Jeremiah. That's what it's about. The discipline, Jeremiah wrote, would last for a period of 70 years. The book of Daniel takes place during those 70 years. So, what was it, that's our question of the day, that made Daniel a great leader? What was it? What is it about Daniel? Well, a few points. Number one, he heard from God. Okay, we're looking at what makes great leaders today. Okay, what are their qualifications, their characteristics, their character traits? He heard from God. Chapter 1, verse 17. And as for these four young men that we just named, I like the next statement. God gave them knowledge. It wasn't their own. Okay, God can impart giftings. God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be, by the way, it was 3 years, it tells us that in chapter 1, that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them. Here we have a job interview, okay, with the king, with the head of the world empire, King Nebuchadnezzar himself. And among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That would be Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, of course. Therefore, by the way, the cream of the crop, okay, were these four. They served before the king. And in all, I love this next verse, in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in his realm. You know what? That says something, doesn't it? Why waste your time with those people? Okay? When God speaks, it's 10 times better. I love that verse. And Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. Daniel was in a position of authority for a series of kings. When another king came into power, Daniel stayed at the top of the cream of the crop all of his life. So what was it that made him a great leader? He heard from God. God gave him that knowledge. God gave him that wisdom, that understanding. It's not like you go to school to get it. Okay, I've been involved in ordinations and so on. I had one of my own, too. Okay, started off there. Now, when you go to that, of course, there are certain requirements that you have to meet before you have the interview. Like, he had an interview here. And you have to meet these requirements. One of those is education, a certain amount of education in a certain way. But you know what? That was a given. So when you get in front of these austere leaders who grill you, okay, they don't ask any questions about that except, do you have the degree? Yes, okay, good. You passed. Okay, good. What they want to know is the all-important question. Tell us your calling from God. I want to know about that. Oh, well, I went to Bible college and seminary. No, we don't want to know about that. Has God called you into the ministry? Tell us about that. That's what we're concerned about for ordination, not education. Anybody can get a degree. Are you aware that anybody can get a PhD that has an IQ of 100? If you just work really hard, you can do it. So that doesn't mean that this person is qualified for anything except they went to school a long time and worked really hard and paid a lot of money. What is the calling on a person's life? A calling on their life. You see, that's what this is saying. They had a calling on their life. God gave them that wisdom, that understanding, and the ability to have prophetic visions and dreams, to hear from God in that unique way. And so, in chapter 2, these gifts are put to the test. God speaks to a pagan king about the future. He can do that. And it disturbed him. He saw it. Didn't know what it meant. Prophecy, think about this, is history before it happens. Daniel is a great example of that. In the book of Daniel, we have extremely accurate prophecy. I mean, right down to the day. I'll show you a little bit later. But prophecy is history before it happens. The king has a dream, and he makes some demands. Let's take a look at those. Chapter 2, verse 1. Now, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians. Now, this is a great scene. Great movie scene, right? Call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, all the guys you don't want, right? And the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said to them, by the way, this is a real good test. I have had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. O king, live forever. That's what you're supposed to say, okay? Tell your servants the dream, and we will give you the interpretation. Anybody can make something up. False prophets say, okay, tell me the dream, and I'll tell you what it means. They make something up. King was smarter than that, okay? The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, in other words, you tell me the dream I had, and then what it means. You shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made an ash heap. Now, that's motivation, isn't it? Probably to resign from being a false prophet right there, okay? I quit. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, now here's some motivation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. That's motivation. However, you need to be able to do it. By the way, what does Torah say about false prophets when they prophesy falsely? Well, Nebuchadnezzar had the right idea. Okay. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation. They answered again and said, let the king tell, this is something they shouldn't do, tell his servants the dream, and then we will give his interpretation. They tried that already. The king answered, he's getting mad now, I know for certain that you would gain time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there's only one decree for you. This is getting deep now. For you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me until the time has changed. Boy, he figured them out, didn't he? Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation. Now, they realize that being false prophets, they can't do this, okay? False prophets can't do this stuff. The Chaldeans answered the king, and they said something they shouldn't have said. There is not a man on earth who can do this. Oh, yeah? I know his name, Daniel. Okay? Anyway, we'll get there. There's not a man on earth. Look, isn't this neat how God allows the false prophets to go out on the limb like this, get way out there, and then cuts them right off? There's not a man alive who can do this, who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such a thing of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. Until now. See, they're trying to get out of this. This made the king really mad. He says, okay. And he said, it's a difficult thing that the king requests. And there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods, of course, whose dwelling is not, in other words, they're not, they don't talk. For this reason, the king was angry and very furious. That means he's more than angry. And gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. The wise men, here's a little bit of a side note. This phrase appears throughout the book of Daniel, the wise men. Now think in terms of going way ahead in time to Luke chapter 2, when wise men came, in Matthew chapter 2. Well, they were from Babylon, okay? They were the men of wisdom from the ancient world. So that's kind of who came later and worshipped Yeshua. They wised up, all right? Some of them did anyway. Anyway, he gave the decree to kill all the wise men. That would include Daniel. So Daniel heard about this, okay? And he heard what was going on. So what does Daniel do? Here's another thing that makes Daniel great. Watch what he does. Verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven. They went to prayer. He called a prayer time. Okay, but look at this. Concerning this secret. So that Daniel, a secret. There are secrets. So that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Interesting, they might not perish with the rest. They might perish, but not these guys. And look at the next verse. Don't you love this? You know, Daniel, there's something important Daniel tells us, the book of Daniel, that when you pray, God hears you and he answers. It happens over and over again in Daniel. But if you don't pray, what happens? Okay, easy equation, isn't it? They prayed, and look at this. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Daniel didn't know what this was. He didn't make something up to the king. He sought the Lord and said, Lord, I'm asking you to tell me what this is. Okay, he didn't guess. He didn't figure something out. And the Lord revealed to him the secret. The secret. God reveals secrets to your heart. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So Daniel then, when he heard from the Lord, he blesses God and thanks God for what he hears. Daniel prayed, God answers. Daniel prayed, God answers. And look at Nebuchadnezzar's response to this. By the way, the next part of the story is Daniel goes in. We'll get verse 27. Okay, verse 27. Daniel answered, he's in front of Nebuchadnezzar, in the presence of the king, and said, the secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, I love this line, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. That's right. They can't do it. But, Marianne, there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets. So have you asked him? Have you asked him to reveal things to you? Ask. See what happens. He's going out on a limb, isn't he? He's saying there is a God. Your guys can't do any of this. And he's saying I can't either, but there is a God in heaven that can. And he talks to me. Okay? He has made known to you, the king, what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. And then Daniel tells him the dream. Whoa, he did exactly what the king had demanded that nobody else could do because God spoke to him. He heard from God. And look at Nebuchadnezzar's response to this. Verse 47. Then the king answered Daniel and said, now I love this one. Truly, your God is the God of gods. Now when God does stuff like that, look at the response. When a miracle happens, hearts are changed. Leaders are touched. And Nebuchadnezzar does have a setback later, but he makes a turnaround at the end of his life to declare that he believes in the God of Israel. But look at this. He says, truly to Daniel, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings and the revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret. Then the king promoted Daniel. By the way, look at this. Isn't Daniel like a captive? He's referred to all through the book as by the other guys, as a captive. Who's really the captive? Just think about that as you read Daniel. He's a captive. But look what God, he's a missionary. Didn't go there on his own free will, but he's nonetheless a missionary. He's being used by God. But look what happens to him. He's finding favor and he's being lifted up because God is with him and anointing him. The king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts. And he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon. By the way, if you think he's a slave, he's not. He's living well. Okay, he's there not under his own, because he wants to, but he's living well. All right? They gave him gifts, made him the ruler over the whole province of Babylon. And look at this. Chief administrator over all the wise men. He's the head wise man of Babylon. Also, Daniel petitioned the king, and he asked for his friends to join him. The king said, yeah. And look at the last verse. And Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Those of you who go with us to Israel should know what that line means. That meant that Daniel was the chief justice of the Supreme Court. The captive is now the chief justice of the Supreme Court. Pretty neat, huh? What God does? And how'd this start? Daniel prayed. He sought the Lord, and God answered. And because he gave the king the right answer, you know, when you hear from God and do the right thing, good things are going to happen. Daniel prayed. God answered. What else makes Daniel great? Well, another thing was that he was a man of no compromise and no fear. Turn to chapter 6. You all know this story, but let's take a new look at it. Chapter 6, verse 1. We have a new king. There's a series of kings, actually five in Daniel. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. Over these, three governors, of whom Daniel was one. Daniel is one of three that is governing the kingdom. Was one of the satraps that might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps. Came to the top again. And here's the reason. Because an excellent spirit was in him. That would be the Holy Spirit. And the king gave thought to setting him over the entire realm. So the governors and satraps, by the way, you have to understand, if you're doing the right thing, it can and will be used against you. Every time you do what's right and righteous, you're going to be attacked with accusations, and hopefully they're going to be false, as in this case. But know you're going to be under attack because of jealousy of other people. When you stand for righteousness, you will be attacked. But you have to do it gently. He doesn't compromise no matter what the circumstance. So, verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. You know what? I got to tell you something right here. And this is one of my questions. What makes Daniel different from other people? Okay, if you want to attack me, okay, you can find real faults and problems. I'll tell you right now, you can do it. Okay, you can. And Satan doesn't have to make up stuff. There's just real stuff that you can figure out and point out, and if you want to. And the same with a lot of people. You know, that's the truth. But Daniel was different. They couldn't find anything wrong with him. Okay? That's my prayer, that I can be a man like this, that I can figure out the stuff that's wrong and fix it and make it right and stand like he did. They come against him concerning the king, but they could find no charge or fault. Verse 4. Why? Because he was faithful. Another characteristic of Daniel. He was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Couldn't find anything wrong. You see, if you live a life of righteousness, that's the testimony of what you have to say. It shows in what you do. People will listen to what you say if you live your life the way you say you're supposed to. Verse 5, and these men said, we shall not find any charge against Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Aha! So the governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. Catch this lie. All the governors, isn't Daniel a governor, of the kingdom, the administrators and the satraps and the counselors and advisors have consulted together, all except one, by the way, to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree. They are tricking him, by the way, and sign it in writing so that it cannot be changed, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. He thought Daniel was in agreement with this because they lied. They said, all of the governors and the administrators have agreed to this. We're in unity on this. Guess what? They lied. Not good to lie to the king. Daniel hears about this. What's Daniel's reaction? Because he has two choices. He's either going to go to the lion's den, or he's going to compromise his faith. All right? You might be faced with that one. What are you going to do? You see, you have to decide ahead of time before you're with the lions. Okay? What are you going to do? And who are you going to do it with? You have to decide those things ahead of time. They lied to the king. Look what Daniel did, verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. To hide? Going to his storm cellar, no? And in his upper room, with his windows open. You know what? Why would this be put in the Bible? Because he's not hiding. He's doing everything out in the open so everybody can see what he's doing. With his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed. And look how he prays and gives thanks before his God as his custom since early days, since he was a kid. Daniel had been a good kid. He'd been a man of prayer since he was young. And he's a man of no compromise. And he prays. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying. That's his crime right there. They found him praying. I hope you can be guilty as charged on that one. What's the charge? Well, they found you praying. Hallelujah. So be it with me. I'm guilty. Guilty, okay? Guilty. And making supplication before his God. Wow, that was his great crime. Well, Daniel's reaction to the decree was his usual when he prayed. He prayed. A man of prayer. The king's decree did not affect Daniel's practice. Regardless of the circumstances or the consequences, Daniel's a man of prayer, no compromise, windows wide open. And then we move to the lion's den. Verse 16. Y'all know the story, but maybe there's more to it than you think. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. And the king spoke to Daniel, saying, now this is the king's heart. Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. See, he realized the heart of Daniel and the heart of these other guys. He's looking at Daniel and saying, you know what? I'm betting on you, not the lions. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets and with his lords for the purpose concerning Daniel that it might not be changed. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No musicians were brought into him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king rose very early in the morning, went in haste to the den of lions. He came to the den and cried out with a lamenting voice. I like that. His heart is showing. A lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, sir, look at this is the king, servant of the living God. Has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Moment of truth right here. Was there silence? Not long. Daniel said, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was innocent before him. And also, O king, I've done nothing wrong before you. They were false accusations, but accusations nonetheless, and there were consequences. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den. And look at this next verse. And no injury whatever was found on him. Here's the reason. Because he believed in his God. Not because he was a lion tamer, you know, not because he had seen the animal channel on TV and knew what to do, no. Because he believed in his God. Now, is God going to keep you out of the lion's den? Maybe not. Daniel was not kept from the lion's den. He was kept in it with the lions. He was kept in it. God never said he would keep us from trials. I would love to find that verse. But gosh, you read Peter, first and second, James, I mean, count it all joy. Wait a minute. No, God never said he'd keep us from trials. But he said, I will never leave you or forsake you. See, that's what you can take to the bank. He'll be with you in the trial. This reminds me as we opened up this morning of 1 Peter chapter 5, where Peter says, your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Well, the lions didn't eat Daniel. What do lions eat, by the way? Hungry lions? People. Yeah, people. Okay, but just the parallel here of Satan comes at you like a roaring lion, you know, that's hungry. God is able to shut the lion's mouth, not only in the book of Daniel, but the attacks of Satan against you. He's able to shut the lion's mouth. And the accusers, you know, the next verse, don't look at it. You won't like it. Okay, the accusers, those who set the trap for Daniel, were caught in their own trap. They did reap what they sowed. And what you see in the next verse, which I'm not reading, is a case, and they didn't even make it to the bottom when the rope was going down. Okay, the lions, there's nothing wrong with their appetite, but God released the angel that was holding them back. And so it was turned around. Their evil came back upon them. And that's how God works. That's how God works. So you may be in a lion's den, all right? But God has promised to be there with you. He's never promised to keep us from times of trial, but to be with us in them. So what else makes Daniel great? Well, he heard from God, didn't have any fear, a man of no compromise. What else? He believed the scriptures. He believed the scriptures. Daniel searches the scriptures, we see. And he goes to the book of Jeremiah. He's looking for understanding of revelation that God had already given to him. Okay? And he takes Jeremiah literally, literally, realizing as he reads that the time specified by God concerning the captivity was coming to an end. And he doesn't know what's going to happen next. That's a good question. What's going to happen next? What after the 7 years, what happens? So he begins to intercede for Israel. He begins to pray and ask, what's next? And when he asks that question, he gets more than he bargained for, more than he asked for. So what I want to do is turn to Daniel chapter 9, and we're going to go to the end of his prayer. But the first, in fact, most of chapter 9, what you have there, is Daniel's prayer of intercession. Most of our liturgy at our Yom Kippur service comes from right here. Not now, but when you get home or this evening, sit down and take a look at that. And you'll see that sounds just like our liturgy at Yom Kippur. It came from this. And I want you to notice the we. He's not the they. They have sinned. They did wrong. You know, we do that all the time, don't we? They did that. No. Daniel says it's we. It's we and it's I. He's included as a part of the community. Even though he's standing in righteousness, when he prays for Israel, he says, it's me. I'm in this too. It's the we. So let's take a look at the end. Verse 19. Look how he closes his prayer. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, listen and act. You know what? I like that. You know, sometimes we say, oh, Lord, forgive. Oh, Lord, listen. But we're a little reluctant to say, Lord, we really like you to act. That's a biblical thing. Asking God to take some action. Okay, Lord, look. Please act. Do not delay. Look at this. For your own sake, my God, for your city. He prays for Jerusalem. And for your people who are called by your name. Where'd that prayer come from? Solomon, King Solomon. Right there. Now, as Daniel is giving us the report, he says, while I was speaking, while I was praying, in confessing the sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of God, yes, while I was speaking in prayer, you know what? How many times in the Bible do we have when God's person is praying, God interrupts their prayer? Lots of times. It's not an interruption, it's an answer. But sometimes God answers you to like now. Not in 6 months or 6 years, but right then. And sometimes we think, that's too good to be true. That can't be you talking to me, Lord. That can't be you. Really, we saw the revelation of secrets. Secrets. You might have secrets in your heart somewhere. Ask God to reveal those to you, not your friends. Not some book or some tape. Ask God. I want you to hear from him, as Daniel did. So Daniel is praying, and he's praying all the right prayers of intercession. And while I was speaking in prayer, the angel Gabriel, whom I had seen in a vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly. I like it when the angels fly swiftly. Why'd they put that in? He got there right now. Right now. Being caused to, didn't stop on the way, okay? Reached me about the time of the evening offering. Interesting line. Daniel goes by Jewish time. What time is it? What's the time of the evening offering? He goes by Jewish time, not Babylonian time. Whoa, look at this. Verse 22. And he informed me and talked with me. How'd you like to talk to the angel Gabriel? Oh, Daniel, I have now come forth to give you skill to understand. Look at this, a lesson on prayer. Now, this has to do with when godly people pray. Okay, this is what happens. At the beginning of your supplications, when he began to pray, the command went out and I have come to tell you. You know what? He was sent to give Daniel the answer to his prayer. The angel Gabriel was sent to give Daniel the answer to his prayers. Look at how God works. It's not over the course of time in my word you'll find it. No, it's right now I'm sending an angel. And look what the angel says to him. And this is stated several times in Daniel. It says, "For you are greatly beloved." Whoa. Here we have a believing Jewish man that stands in righteousness. God takes note of that. And there's an emotional heart response from God. It's stated several times in Daniel by angels. "You are greatly beloved of God." Whoa. Isn't that just an amazing statement? "Therefore, consider the matter and understand the vision." Daniel just says, what's going to happen next? The answer he gets is all of the rest. Here's what's going to happen in all of time concerning Israel. He gets a calendar of prophecy to the end. Didn't ask for that one. It starts off by a certain amount of time is determined for your people, for your holy city, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy, the Messiah. Wait a minute, your holy city, I thought it was destroyed. And no temple, it's going to be rebuilt. Just like the other prophets had said. So what happens here is that before Daniel has finished praying, I love this, a miraculous answer occurs. I've had some pretty good answers to prayer. Wouldn't this be the coolest thing? An angel shows up in person, not just any angel, the angel Gabriel. See, Gabriel is God's announcer. For big announcements, Gabriel is the one who comes and does this. This is a big one. He announces something. The announcement is when Messiah is going to come. It's not just he's coming and here are the vague signs, the cloud. No, he gets really specific. About 600 years after this, am I okay? Okay. The same angel, Gabriel, makes the same kind of announcement to a woman named Miriam. Only this time he says, the Messiah will come now, right now. Same angel, and he will come through you, right now. See that connection? The answer to Daniel's prayer over Israel tells us the time of Messiah's coming. And that Israel, if you look at this whole chapter, that Israel is going to be God's prophetic clock. And there will be an Israel in the end of time. So all of this is in this one chapter. Now, the temptation, as I look at the clock, to do this is killing me. I'm not going to do it. But if you get Josh McDowell's book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, he's got a chapter on this with all the detailed numbers. I'll give you some of the bottom line ones, though, in just a minute. But the angel Gabriel appears to Daniel twice, while he's praying. Now, is that a coincidence? Things happen in prayer. Pray more. What's happening in the heavenlies when you're praying? I think a lot of stuff. What's happening when you don't pray? Well, it doesn't connect to you. Pray. Daniel, the key that unlocks Daniel's success, he's a man of prayer. And when you take a look at this event and others in the book of Daniel, Isaiah 65, verse 24, I love it. And as Isaiah prophesied, it shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer. God anticipates your prayers. Sometimes the answers are on the way before you pray. You ever had stuff like that happen to you? Where God had to set something up years before to make certain things happen, to get you with somebody else at a certain place at a certain time, and then you pray about it the day before, and when you look back, it was years of setup that you weren't aware of, that God says, I'm arranging this because I know what you're going to pray, and I'm answering it ahead of time. Before they call, I will answer, and while they are yet speaking, praying, while they are yet praying, I will hear. So it's important to pray. Big things happen. Big things happen. Well, in the book of Daniel, what we see here is that God's voice is being heard. Who? By the captors, the kings, the bad guys. They're hearing the voice of God and saying, what does this mean? Several of the kings, but God's message is being revealed by the captives. Kind of a reversal, huh? Even in captivity and in dispersion, God's prophets are alive and well. God is the one who's in control of world history, not these kings. A Jewish captive was used by God to speak into the lives of the most powerful men on earth. It's going to be happening again because we're going to be the head and not the tail, according to prophecy and scripture. We will have places of influence at the highest levels of government. It's prophesied that that will happen. It happened in the days of Paul. Paul gave his testimony before Caesar and others as well. And so be it with us. They will have opportunity to hear. It's up to them to make